it's so interesting to me that everywhere I turn in the Bible, there are references to the way God will ultimately punish humankind and destroy human civilization, but especially how he destroys the wicked, but saves those who are good, those who have earned their way into heaven. So welcome to today's sermon. I'm Mike Adams here with Abundance.Church, and today we're going to be looking at Psalm 11, chapter 11. New King James Version is what I'm reading from, as usual. And there's a lot of wisdom, even though this is a very short chapter. There's a lot of wisdom in this. But let's start out with the idea that your entry into heaven is, of course, conditional. And as obvious as that is, because God refers to it over and over again, Jesus refers to it, the apostles refer to it, all throughout the Old and New Testament. But as frequently as that is stated throughout the Bible, many Christians today think that that's too mean. There's this portion of Christians that is all about just self-improvement and everything's good and everything's just love and acceptance and inclusion. And they don't have any standards. They don't have any standards or discernment. There's no bar that anyone has to meet in order to get into heaven, as far as many of these people are concerned. And that's contradictory to what God tells us. It's also contradictory to what King David wrote in Psalm 11. So let's get into that, but just remember, entry into heaven is conditional. You can be rejected if you don't earn it. So here we go, Psalm 11, verse 1. In the Lord I put my trust. How can you say to my soul, flee as a bird to your mountain? For look, the wicked bend their bow. They make ready their arrow on the string that they may shoot secretly at the upright in heart. It's like, you know, wicked people are ready to harm and kill those who are good. Verse 3, if the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? See, this is a lesson or a question for all of us today. If the foundations of society have turned evil, what can righteous people do? It's really one of the biggest questions in human history. What can righteous people do in the face of such evil? So much demonic possession, so many Christian churches promoting Zionism, which is a philosophy of ethnic supremacy rooted in violence and genocide and disobedience to God, and contradicting the teachings of Christ. You know, Zionism is an anti-Christ philosophy. It's apartheid, or similar to apartheid. It is ethnic supremacy that says one group of people has the right to murder, slaughter, and kill another group of people because the first group of people says they're superior and they're chosen by God. So that is evil. That is evil. Christ clearly teaches so, and so does the Lord also in the Old Testament. But we shall continue here. Again, Psalm 11 now, verse 4. The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold, his eyelids test the sons of men. Now, what does this mean? This means that the Lord sits in this other dimension that we call heaven, and he watches us. He watches us. Why? Because he is judging us. And I hear a lot in society today, you know, oh, it's wrong to judge people. You know, when I say things like, evil people aren't going to go to heaven, you know, and I'll hear from some people, well, it's wrong to judge people. You can't judge people. There's no judgment here. Well, actually, it's right to judge people. If they're evil, I'm going to have discernment. I don't want anything to do with them. If they're evil people, neither does God. God will judge them, and you and I should judge people based on their behavior. We should have discernment. We should, you know, interact with good people, but reject wicked, evil people. Why? Because that's what God does, and that's what God teaches us to do. Of course we have to judge people, just like we have to judge, you know, food. If you're eating a banana and the banana is all rotten and dark brown and mushy, and you take a bite of it and it's like, bleh, there's nasty mush in your mouth, you have to judge that banana and say, oh, this banana's bad. I'm not going to eat the rest of this banana. Right? So you have to judge the banana. Well, I guess a lot of Christians would say, no, it's wrong to judge the banana. You have to eat that banana and pretend that it's not bad. Really? No, I don't. That banana's going to the chickens or the compost pile or someplace like that. You know, if you're eating a bad apple, you bite into it and a nasty piece of apple, you're like, oh, something's wrong here. Let's not consume that. Let's spit that out. Let's judge the apple. If it's bad, if it's rotten, you avoid it, right? You should do that with people. Also, if they're rotten, you should avoid them. The Lord gives us this perfect example because he watches from heaven and he judges people. You're good. You're going to heaven. Oh, you over there? Not so much. You're a bad person. You're going to burn in the lake of fire and brimstone. Yeah. See, I don't know why this has become socially unacceptable to apply standards. If you think about it, just the word judgment just means we have standards. We have standards that we expect in the people around us. And if you don't meet those standards, i.e., you know, don't be a cocaine addict and bring hookers to the dinner party and, you know, whatever, show up with clothes on, things like that, sober even. If you don't have standards, then what are you going to get in your life? You're going to get evil, wickedness. You're going to get laziness, complacency. You're going to get a lot of bad people in your life. So of course you have to have standards. Of course you have to judge people, and God judges people. So I don't want to hear any more Christians or Christian pastors saying, oh, it's wrong to judge people. God judges people, and he does so for all the right reasons. Okay, verse number 5. Here it is. The Lord tests the righteous. That's right. I mean, challenges to righteous people. Not going to be easy to earn the full support of the Lord, even though I've said in the past that it's easy to be good. But as you know, the Lord also puts challenges in your way and tries to, you know, make you grow a little bit, make you have to scramble. So yeah, overall, it's easy to choose to be a good person. It's not a difficult decision. And day to day, it's not difficult to be a good person. I mean, how hard is it to help others or just to treat others with dignity and compassion? It's not that difficult. But you will be tested from time to time, that's for sure. Okay, the Lord tests the righteous, but the wicked and the one who loves violence, his soul hates. This says the Lord hates those who love violence. Who loves violence in the world today? Zionists love violence. They love killing women and children and civilians in Gaza, in Lebanon, where they are killing and bombing Christians in Lebanon. Zionists love violence. God hates their souls. It says so right here. The Lord hates them. That's why the Lord destroys Israel, by the way, which we've covered many times before. Israel is, in the eyes of the Lord, a wicked, evil nation that is disobedient to God. And that's why Israel's destroyed. And Israel, especially the Zionists, they love violence. And so they will get violence from the Lord. What they dish out upon the children of Gaza, the Lord will dish out upon them a billion times stronger in the form of a comet impact, which we know as the sixth trumpet, the sixth bowl, and the sixth seal. 666 is what destroys Israel, the nation of demonic evil, in the eyes of God. That's not even me judging that. That's what God says throughout the Old Testament over and over and over again, and also references to it, of course, in the New Testament as well. So again, that's not my judgment. Half of the Old Testament, it seems, is God reminding the Israelites how evil they are. It's all right there in black and white. See, this is why Christian churches don't teach the Bible. This is why. They don't teach you to actually read the Bible. They want to pick and choose what you read, and they leave out all the parts where God criticizes Israel. There was a very prominent Christian pastor in California. I'm not going to say his name. It doesn't matter. He taught what was it? He taught Ezekiel 7 through like 20, where God is chiding Israel for being so evil. I'm pretty sure those were the chapters he was teaching. And in his entire sermon, he implied that this was God telling America how evil it was. He never mentioned Israel. Yeah, he never mentioned Israel. He was pretending like Ezekiel was telling America how evil they are. Well, obviously, America didn't even exist in the day of Ezekiel. Israel did. Ancient Israel. That's who God was angry with because they're evil. And, you know, they still are evil to this day. So not much has changed. But now in verse 6 here in Psalm 11, we see references to the sixth trumpet, the sixth bowl, the sixth seal, which is, of course, the sixth impact. Here it is. Quote, upon the wicked, he will rain coals, fire and brimstone, and a burning wind shall be the portion of their cup. Whoa, what is this? These are the trumpets and the bowls. Think about it. Upon the wicked, he will rain coals. So all throughout Revelation and talking about the trumpets, we have the raining down of great hailstones with fire and brimstone. And then it says the next line, fire and brimstone and a burning wind. What is the burning wind? Well, those are air bursts of the comets. That's what's referred to in the first trumpet, which says it will burn all the grass on the surface of the earth. And it will also burn 1/3 of the trees. That's because the first comet, the first trumpet, impacts land, a heavily forested area. I'm guessing maybe Siberia or Russia or Europe is where that one hits. But it's very clear. Fire and brimstone and a burning wind shall be the portion of their cup. Well, the portion of their cup means this is what they are receiving, like the part that gets thrust onto them into or due to their cup. A cup is a smaller version of a bowl. Or you could say a bowl is a larger version of a cup. You know, you go to a restaurant and you order soup and they say, do you want a cup or do you want a bowl? The bowl's bigger, the cup is smaller. Well, the bowl is what is poured out onto Israel by the angels in the sixth bowl in Revelation. And it is that bowl that destroys Israel. It's the same event that's referred to at the last of Ezekiel 38 and Matthew 24, which we've been over many times, and it's alluded to in Joel, and it's alluded to in even Zephaniah, and also here in Psalm, believe it or not. This is very interesting because, you know, David was given a lot of prophecy information, actually, which kind of makes sense. But the cup is the smaller version of the bowl. So he's saying that these wicked people who love violence, and remember, David is talking to who? Who's he talking to? The Israelites. He's talking to the Israelites, and he's saying to them, if you're wicked, you're going to be destroyed by fire and brimstone and burning wind. That's going to be your portion of the cup, which is a smaller version of the bowl, and it's the bowl that destroys Israel with the sixth bowl. But what David also says is that if you are righteous, you shall be recognized by the Lord, you shall be rewarded with entry into heaven. He doesn't say that right here in Psalm 11, but he says it elsewhere. But verse 7 kind of alludes to that, and this is the last verse of this chapter. Quote, for the Lord is righteous. He loves righteousness. His countenance beholds the upright. So that right there is saying that if you are morally upright, if your soul is righteous, if you are an upstanding citizen, you know, upright, upstanding, then you are going to be rewarded by the Lord because the Lord is righteous and he loves righteousness. So what is this entire chapter actually saying? It says that the Lord hates those who love violence. The Lord hates those who are wicked and he will destroy them with fire and brimstone and burning winds, but he loves those who are righteous, and he will behold those who are upright. That's really what this says. I mean, that's essentially the message of this chapter. So ask yourself today, who are the people that God hates? And the word hates is used in this chapter. That's not a paraphrase. That's at the end of verse 5, at least in the New King James Version here. Quote, but the wicked and the one who loves violence, his soul hates. In other words, the Lord's soul hates. Who are those who love violence today? Who are they? Honestly, ask yourself, who are those who love violence? They're the ones who are calling for violence, who are celebrating violence, who are dropping bombs on children, who are celebrating the manufacture of bombs and weapons. They are the ones who are invading other people's lands and killing them and bombing them in order to steal their land and steal their resources. So who are the people who love violence today? Well, that would be NATO, the United States of America, and Israel. Which nations are struck by the trumpets, the seven trumpets? Well, we know that the first impact hits a forested area, and I already mentioned earlier that that might be Europe, which could indicate the EU or NATO. And by the way, Gog in Ezekiel 38, Gog refers to the army from the north, or armies, plural, from the north. Those are armies either from Turkey, a NATO member, or the EU, which is closely associated with NATO. Most of the EU nations are NATO members, or at least the prominent ones are. So that's the first trumpet. The second trumpet strikes the Atlantic Ocean, we believe. I've analyzed this in another sermon, which inundates the coastal waters of who? Mostly NATO nations, or the United States of America and the United Kingdom. Now, obviously, the waves would also hit Africa. That's probably collateral damage. And obviously, some of the waves would hit, you know, Canada as well. But Canada is in with the U.S. in terms of supporting genocide and weapons and censorship and all kinds of evil that God hates. The third trumpet strikes the United States of America. We believe it strikes New York City or somewhere close to that, the land of rivers and springs. And we believe that New York City is destroyed by an impact, and that New York City is the great harlot that's mentioned in Revelation, and that America is, in essence, the new shadow Babylon, and that America is destroyed, and the angels rejoice when America is destroyed. And then if we fast forward, there's impact number 4 and 5. We're not sure exactly where those hit, but they do extensive damage. And then impact number 6 hits Israel. So two nations that love violence right now, the United States and Israel. The United States funds terrorism in the Middle East. The United States commits violence on a mass scale. The United States assassinates leaders. Trump gave the order to assassinate Soleimani, by the way, an Iranian official. Israel has assassinated dozens, if not hundreds, of various officials, some of them even in Beirut, some of them in Tehran, some of them in Lebanon, some of them in Gaza, some of them in Yemen. Israel is a nation of violence and mass assassinations. God despises them. God hates their souls because they love violence. And so 2 out of the 7 trumpets target the two nations of the most violence in the world today, which happen to be the two nations founded on Christianity. That's the United States of America and Israel. They are the only two nations that were founded, and I'm referring to the modern version of Israel from 1948 with the UN recognition. The United States and Israel are the only two nations founded in Christianity, and they are the nations that God hates the most because of their love for violence. And that's why 2 out of the 7 asteroid impacts or comet impacts are specifically targeting the United States and Israel. Understand? That's the wrath of God that will be unleashed against America if we do not change. I believe that, of course, God can intervene. God can change the future that has not yet occurred for us. Even though it is written in the book of Revelation, I still believe we have free will and we can make a choice. I believe there are multiple possible futures. And most likely, the book of Revelation, the angels gave this information to John because they wanted to give him the warning of either what will occur most likely or what could occur in the most likely scenarios. But I believe there's a possibility for us to change that, but it would mean that the church has to stop promoting violence. And that's the Christian churches in America, mostly the evangelical churches that promote Israel and promote Zionism. Because those churches promote violence and genocide against God's children, because all humans on earth are God's children, because of that, God chooses to target and destroy both the United States of America and Israel with cosmic weapons of mass destruction. That's how he shows his face. That's how he shows his fury. And he proves to the world that the Lord is real and the Lord will require you to behave in a way that does not condone and promote violence. And it's interesting, of course, that the Lord uses violence to send the message of how much he hates violence. But it's kind of like, you know, humanity is the rambunctious, wicked child that is spanked by a parent, and then the parent says, you know, this hurts me more than it hurts you, you know, as the parent is spanking. I guess nobody spanks anybody anymore, but in the days when I grew up, parents spanked their children. Not me, actually. I was never spanked. That you might find that interesting. My parents did not engage in spanking, and I was actually a really good kid. But you're familiar with the concept that when parents spank their children, sometimes they say, you know, it hurts me more than it hurts you. They're spanking the child, and it's hurting them in their heart. I'm so sorry I have to do this to you, but you need to learn a lesson. Well, that's what God does with the seven trumpets. God sends the comet to collide with a city or a nation of evil, like New York City or eventually Israel and the Middle East. I don't think that God wanted things to end up that way. This is just my opinion, but I don't think that that was God's first choice. Obviously, he tried to warn Israel for thousands of years, stop being evil. And he's also warned the United States in various ways, you know, all kinds of solar eclipses and things, many different signs and symbols. He's warning the United States of America. He's warning the churches, stop being evil. Stop promoting violence. You're supposed to be Christians? Well, you should walk with Christ, maybe. Think about if you are Christians, maybe learn from Christ lessons. You know, it's like these Zionist Christian churches in America, they read the Bible. It's like, it's love and peace and tolerance and forgiveness and humanity and compassion for everybody. And then they say, but bomb the children in Gaza, you know, like the beast comes out of them. This is what happens in Christian churches all across America and Christian pastors too. Some of them look completely demon-possessed. It's like, what got into you? Oh, Satan. Yeah, that's right. Now we see it. Some of them, I wouldn't be surprised if they grew fangs and horns like right there on stage as they're calling for violence against everybody that's an enemy of Israel. It's truly insane. And then there are other Christian pastors that just will never mention Israel. They won't say anything. They'll never criticize Israel. They'll just say, you should love God and you should love Jesus and you should have Jesus in your life and just everybody's okay and everything's okay and all is good. And if you're like, what about Israel bombing the children to death and blowing people up by exploding their electronic devices and burning hospital patients alive in the triage tents outside the hospital in the parking lot? They burned alive with IVs in their arms. What about that? Is, you know, and the pastor said, well, we don't talk about that here. We like to keep everything positive. Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you just go change your tampon, pastor? Because you're weak, woke DEI pastor. God doesn't buy that. And if you read the Bible, you would know that. God judges you. And he judges you fairly. Don't get me wrong. He judges you fairly, and you can't cheat because he knows everything that you've done. He watches you. It's all recorded in your book of life. Even here in Psalm 11, it talks about he's watching you through his eyelids. I guess, you know, he can see through eyelids because he's God. He doesn't even have eyelids, obviously. That's just, you know, metaphor. But he can watch you. So you are going to be judged. Your behavior does matter. And what you support does matter. And ask yourself, are you complicit in evil? Or are you complicit in good, so to speak? Maybe complicit is not the right word, but are you complicit in evil? Or do you advocate the good? Who are you supporting? Who are you shopping with? Where do you spend money? Is it an evil corporation rooted in Satanism? By the way, do y'all know what the Starbucks logo is? Do any of you know what the Starbucks logo is? Yeah, it's the logo refers to this, I forgot the name of the actual goddess, but it's a half human, half fish, naked mermaid that's holding its legs up to expose its genitalia for sexual intercourse. That is the symbol of Starbucks, by the way. And I'm looking it up. There's Lilith symbolism from Jewish mythology, which is a nod to a feminine mysticism. There are Masonic stripes. There's a 666 pattern in the symbol. There's the siren's tail. And it's, many people would say, it's occult symbolism. And, quote, seductive imagery of the sea. Uh-huh. Oh, apparently it's based on the Nordic woodcut of a siren. Okay. So again, it's a half human, half fish, female mermaid holding its legs open for sexual intercourse. So what you see on the side of the Starbucks logo is just the creature holding its legs, its ankles up, but they don't show like below the torso. If they did, you know, you would understand the full picture. So there's evil all around you, and a lot of you don't know it, and you buy from evil, and you support evil. If you support Israel, you are supporting evil today, and no question about it. If you are supporting Zionism, you are supporting evil. If you support weapons manufacturers, you are supporting evil. And God will judge accordingly. It's not me judging, it's God judging. So if you don't want to go to the lake of fire and brimstone for eternity, which is hell, then you need to be careful about your associations. Choose good, not evil, not wickedness. And be aware that violence is something that God despises. He hates those who love violence. And this is why I've said many times, you know, I'm very proficient in various firearms and AR-15s and long-range rifles. I'm quite an accomplished long-range rifle shooter. I've never hunted an animal. I don't need to. I shoot steel plates and target grids at long distances, like 1,000 yards, but I do not shoot animals. I don't consider committing the death of an animal to be a form of sport or even skill. And I'm not saying that every person who's a hunter is evil. I absolutely understand that it's part of many people's culture. For some people, it's a food source. It is wild game, which is very healthy food compared to processed food. And Native Americans and many indigenous populations, of course, they all hunted, and they did so in a way that considered, you know, sacred, with some divine recognition of the soul of the animal, right? So I'm not saying that if you're a hunter that you're a bad person. There are contexts in which hunting is morally acceptable, let's say. However, for me personally, I've made the decision that I cannot commit an act of violence against an animal, and I don't need the meat. I don't need that. I mean, I have enough resources I can afford to buy organic free-range meat or just buy beef from local farmers who raise cattle, and then they do process the cattle. So, you know, you could say, well, that's secondhand violence against the cattle. Indeed, you are correct. But then also I remember that God gave me a blood type that requires a certain amount of meat and saturated fat. So my choice of eating meat, which is rather limited, by the way, I don't eat a lot of meat, but it's something that God designed into my body. If I don't eat meat, I don't do very well, especially with my high level of physical activity. So I try to make the best decisions I can. I try to be as compassionate as I can, but I don't hunt animals because I don't want to commit violence against animals other than the ones that I'm eating some limited quantity of, typically beef, but you know, sometimes chicken and occasionally turkey. So those are my ethics in that realm. I eat consciously. That's the critical thing here. And I don't waste food. I eat while I'm giving thanks for the plant or the animal that provided that nourishment. And I'm giving thanks to God for his blessings. So I'm eating mindfully. I'm eating spiritually. I'm not eating blindly. So that's the lesson today. It's really a simple lesson. God judges you. As a result, you need to judge yourself and correct your behavior that is not in alignment with God. That is, if you want to get a VIP pass to the pearly gates at some point, or if you fail to have standards, if you fail to be a good person, and if you support violence and wickedness, especially against the innocent, God says you will burn in hell. Not me saying that. That's what God says. And if you don't believe me, read the Bible, because it's all right there. So what I love about the Lord, this is one of the things I really love about the Bible, is the spiritual meritocracy, because we live in a world where so many people get away with so much evil and wickedness. They get away with it, and it seems like they're never punished, and they might go through this entire life never being punished. Guess what? God hammers them, sends them to hell, and they deserve it. They deserve it. At the same time, good people deserve to go to heaven. And that's exactly what God promises to deliver. What I love about that is that, you know, finally, people get what they deserve. That's God's promise in the Bible. Every human being will get exactly what they deserve. Everyone. There are no exceptions, and you can't buy your way out of it. And you can't fib and deceive. You can't hire a PR team and engage in a bunch of spin. No, God knows who you are in your heart, in your brain, in your behavior. You're going to be judged accordingly. I love that. And I also love the fact that you don't have to be wealthy to be a good person. You don't have to be rich. You don't have to have political connections. You don't have to be a powerful person. You don't have to be a popular person to be a good person. You can earn your way into heaven even if you have none of the things that modern earthly society tends to judge people on. But you can't go to heaven if you endorse and promote violence, no matter how much money you have, no matter how powerful you are, no matter how many friends you have or how popular you are. You cannot go to heaven. So you know what that tells me? You know who's not going to heaven? You know who's not going to heaven? Well, every supporter of Israel is not going to heaven, unless they repent and change their ways. But think about all the people in politics. Think about all the people in finance and banking and celebrities and sports and actors and famous people, influential people. Think about how many of them are endorsing and promoting Israel. No matter what Israel does, they are pro-Israel. You realize all those people are going to hell according to God's own promises. That's a huge realization, because those people, a lot of them think that they think they're Christians and they think they're going to heaven. imagine the surprise that's coming for them when it turns out to be the lake of fire and brimstone. Don't forget the brimstone. Would you like a little brimstone with your fire there? Yeah. How about a side dish of giant millstones falling out of the sky? How about that? Hailstones weighing 100 pounds each, whatever. People are going to get exactly what they deserve. And we get to choose what we deserve. We choose it through our actions. And that is a gift that God has given us. The gift of free will gives us the gift of choosing where our eternal soul goes. That is a gift just as precious as life itself. And if you don't recognize that gift and you don't harness that gift by being a good person, then you're a cosmic fool. And most people living today, they are cosmic fools because they are not going to qualify as good people in the eyes of God. I often wonder, out of like right now, 8 billion people, but if you take the number of all the people who ever lived on Earth, what is that number? Any idea? Let me look that up. It's probably not that much larger than 8 billion, but let me see. Okay, according to the Brave search engine here, it says the total number of humans that ever lived is 108 billion. Okay, so I guess it is a lot larger than 8 billion, but yeah, 108 billion to estimates of up to 117 billion. But, you know, then again, that study claims that humans have been around for 192,000 years. So, not sure I believe that. So, yeah, it seems like nonsense. What, 108 billion people have lived on this planet? I don't think so. Where are all the skeletons, you know? All right, so I'm checking to see how many humans have lived since the birth of Christ. And let's see, I'm getting different numbers. One number is 31 billion, another number is 78 billion. So, I don't know, let's kind of meet close to the middle. Let's say 50 billion humans have lived since Christ, okay? Let's just say it's 50 billion. That still seems like a lot to me, but how many of those 50 billion do you think are going to go to heaven? I mean, total, like including all of us living today, plus all those who ever lived since the birth of Christ. If it's 50 billion people, how many of those are going to heaven? I don't know the answer, but 2 billion? 2.5 billion? A billion? I don't know. Maybe it's only 144,000 total. Who knows? But anyway, it's nowhere near, it's not going to be half. It's not going to be even 10%. Right? It's not going to be a big number. So that's good news because there will be plenty of parking in heaven. But hell is going to be very crowded, which makes hell even worse because of the overcrowding. So you don't want to end up there. All right. You get to choose your own adventure. You get to choose where you go. Most important thing in this, in understanding this, is to read the Bible yourself. Don't take my word for it. Don't take your pastor's word for it. Don't take anybody's word for it. Read it yourself because it will shock you what it says that you were never told. I keep getting feedback on these sermons from people who say, that was amazing. You said things that my pastor and my church never told me. Yeah, that's kind of my job, is to bring you things that normally you're never taught. And I've also had some people respond and say, I didn't even believe what you said, Mike, so I had to go look it up. Because I give chapter and verse, by the way, like today, I give chapter and verse. You can look it up. And then people look it up and they say, wow, you were right. It does say that. I'm shocked, you know, can't believe it. Yeah, the Bible's pretty amazing. You should try reading it sometime. Especially if you claim to be a Christian, read it. Took me a long time to read it. I mean, to really read it. And I'm learning from it every day. And now that I'm seriously reading it, I'm blown away by what's in it. I'm shocked. Like every sermon I give, There's something new that comes to mind, some new discovery, some new connection that I didn't realize before. So hopefully you're having a similar experience, but the bottom line is be a good person. You'll go to heaven. Overall, it's not that hard to be a good person, but you do have to understand the difference between good and evil, and you have to exercise discernment or judgment. That's it. All right. Thanks for listening today. God bless you all. You can check out all the other sermons at abundance.church. I'm Mike Adams. Take care.